Welcome to the Howie Silbiger Show on the True Talk Radio Network. Get in on the conversation. Call 1-877-669-1292.
And welcome to the program. My name is Howie Silbiger. So happy to be here. We are live, which means you could call in. Number to call, 1-877-669-1292. It's 1-877-669-1292 to get in on the conversation right here on the show. I am awfully confused. I really am. It seems to me that perhaps, just perhaps, and I'm floating this, it may not be true, I'm floating this, and I don't know if you agree with me or disagree with me, but I'm going to float this idea that perhaps, maybe, the United Nations is a little anti-Israel. And maybe they don't like Jews too much. I know I'm floating this as a crazy, crazy thing that I'm floating here. But maybe, just maybe, the United Nations doesn't quite like Israel or Jews all that much. This is just the idea I want to float. Now, what brought me to this conclusion, to this idea, to this thought? The United Nations Security Council stood for a moment of silence to remember the president of Iran. Now, the president of Iran died in a plane crash or a helicopter crash a couple of days ago. And almost immediately after his sudden death, the UN Security Council met and stood for a moment of silence to remember the butcher of Iran, a man responsible for killing thousands of his own people, a man responsible for funding terror and organizing terrorism around the world, a man responsible for helping to organize and fund the October 7th massacre in southern Israel, a man responsible for funding Hamas and Hezbollah, a man responsible for many and much of the strife, the terrorism, and the violence happening in the world today. And the UN Security Council stood for a moment of silence. Now, why does this bother me a little bit? Why does this make me think that perhaps the UN Security Council is a little against Jews or a little against Israel? I'll tell you. When October 7th happened, when Hamas went into Israel and indiscriminately killed, raped, murdered, mutilated thousands of Israelis, men, women, and children, the UN Security Council took a couple of months before they even recognized that the massacre happened. So one has to think that perhaps, just maybe, the United Nations Security Council is not so pro-Israel and not so pro-Jewish. But then again, countries like Canada, also took a while to respond. The Canadian Prime Minister saying, we don't have all the details. We have to wait before we could comment on this. And we don't know who's responsible. We have to wait. But then was quick to condemn Israel for bombing a hospital that they didn't bomb. And very slow in removing the condemnation, very slow in backtracking and saying he made a mistake. So it's interesting. It's infuriating. And I don't know if you're as angry as I am when you think about this. I don't know if you're as angry as I am when you talk about this. The other day, a former student of mine, Isabella Hazan, went to McGill University, where a bunch of socialists have been camping out in the name of Palestine, to have a discussion with them. She held up a sign. She went with Rudy Rockman, and they had signs. And each of those signs said, I witnessed the October 7th massacre. Come talk to me. Well, after facing multiple minutes of abuse from the socialists that have co-opted the Palestinian cause and have sat on McGill University Montreal campus for the last couple of weeks, they were escorted off campus by campus security and the police. What? They were thrown, the Jews were thrown off campus and the Hamas supporters were allowed to stay? The world is upside down. And we're seeing campuses across North America throw the socialists off campus, throw the pro-Hamas movement off campus. Now, we discussed in previous shows, we've talked about this, that the pro-Hamas movement isn't actually pro-Hamas and isn't actually pro-Palestine at all. In fact, 90% of the people who are there have no idea about any of the Palestinian cause. They have no clue what they're standing there for. Just ask random people in the crowd, what is this protest about? They'll say, free Palestine. Ask them where Palestine is. They couldn't even point it on a map. This is a cause that has been co-opted by the same people who co-opted many other causes, including Black Lives Matter, including Occupy Wall Street. These are socialist anarchists who want to destroy the American way of life, want to destroy Western civilization. And the only way they could do that is to co-opt other people's causes and then destroy those causes and try to wreak havoc, as much havoc as they can while they have media attention before they move on to the next one. Now, if you didn't believe me, and I made this prediction already in previous shows, but if you didn't believe me then, you're seeing it come to fruition now. So just the other day, the pro-Hamas protesters were blocking off one of the major arteries in Montreal. And the police came and used batons and tear gas, and they beat them out of the street. They refused to leave. They refused to comply with police orders to unblock the street. So the police made them unblock the street very forcefully. Thank God. And then suddenly, the Free Palestine movement suddenly flipped over. And so the people who were protesting in the street are suddenly not yelling Free Palestine anymore. Now they're yelling police brutality. What? What do you mean? They're yelling police brutality. That's what they're yelling now. And so that's the next cause. So because the Palestine movement, that was the door opener, they've walked through the door now. And the next cause is going to be police brutality, where they'll go to the streets and they'll start beating people up, yelling that the police are brutal, so we could be even more brutal. I'm not sure how that works, but it seems like every protest against police brutality turns into brutality. So we're protesting the thing that we're actually committing. It's a fascinating, fascinating bipolar protest where we hate the fact that the police are violent, so we're going to be violent to prove that we hate violence. I don't know. I've never really put too much thought into it. It's hard to think about stupidity like that, but that's what it is. These people should all be arrested and thrown into prison, not because they have ideas that are contrary to my ideas, not because they're expressing an idea that they want to support a genocidal, raping, murdering terror group. That's not why they should be thrown into jail. They should be thrown into jail because they're stupid. Stupid people should go to jail. People who protest, people who stand and protest for something they don't understand should be arrested. Oh, supporting terrorists should be arrested too. 1-877-669-1292 is the number to call. It's 1-877-669-1292. In an ideal world, that would actually happen, where when somebody went and made some kind of stupid statement and stood for something that was totally idiotic, we'd be able to arrest them. That would be a perfect world. Unfortunately, we do not live in a perfect world. And actually, we live in a world where I believe we should have freedom of speech, and I believe that we should have freedom of protest. I have absolutely no issue. If somebody actually believes in the cause, I don't think any of the people there actually believe in the cause, but if somebody actually does believe in the cause, I actually have no issue with them standing up and expressing themselves. I have no issue with them protesting. I don't care if I agree with them or disagree with them. This is what democracy is all about. This is what freedom is all about. And I have no problem with people who are legitimately concerned about the cause getting up and protesting and demonstrating for the cause. That doesn't bother me. I don't care what the cause is. And if part of their protest is speaking badly about the other side, I'm okay with that too. I'm not made out of sugar, and I'm not made out of feathers. And if somebody insults me or insults my people, I have wide enough shoulders to be able to absorb the insult. I don't go crying. I don't yell censorship. I don't think that we should censor anybody. People should have the right to say what they want, even if you disagree with them. If your argument is stronger than their argument, it doesn't matter what they say. If you present your argument better than they present their argument, it doesn't matter what they say. If you sell your idea better than they sell their idea, it doesn't matter what they say. And so we should stop worrying about what the other side is saying. We should stop worrying about what the other side is doing. And we should start worrying about how we are going to protect ourselves, how we are going to teach our children and future generations to defend themselves, both physically and intellectually. We failed at that. We have failed at that for years, for decades, for generations. Ask any kid, the average Jewish kid going to a Jewish school, if they could defend themselves in a fight. The average kid will say no. They never learned martial arts. They never learned how to defend themselves. Ask a Jewish college kid who takes their Jewish imagery, they take their kippahs, they take their Magen Davids, they hide them when they go into university campuses because they're afraid. Ask them, why are you afraid? And they will tell you that they're afraid that somebody's going to come and physically attack them, or somebody's going to come and ask them a question they can't answer. Therefore, they have to hide their Judaism to ensure their safety on campus. Now, as disgusting and as vile as that sounds, and it is vile, it's vile that people have to feel afraid on campus, but it's even more vile that Jewish kids have to feel that they have to remove their Judaism in order to be safe. This is the message we have taught them over the years. Just hide it. Just don't tell anyone you're Jewish. Just don't be proud of your Judaism. Just hide it. Put it in the corner. Put it in a drawer. Close the drawer and walk away. This is what we've taught our kids. I've never hidden my Judaism. I've been a proud Jew. I continue to be a proud Jew, and I will forever be a proud Jew until the last breath I take. And I've felt the brunt of the anti-Jewish movement. I'm not going to say the anti-Israel movement. I'm going to say the anti-Jewish movement at universities. I've been told to take my kippah off because Concordia University in Montreal is an Arabic university. I've been Hitler saluted. I've been pushed around. I've had riots start around me. But that has only strengthened my Judaism. It hasn't shaken my Judaism. Many people ask me, Howie, how do you stay such a strong Jew? And my answer has always been my Judaism was beaten into me. In high school, I was beaten up every single day because I was a Jew. In university, I was attacked on a daily basis because I was a Jew. My Judaism was beaten into me. The strength of my Judaism and my conviction was beaten into me. It didn't have to be. It was there anyway. But there is nobody at all that's ever going to make me less proud of a Jew. And that's the way I want all of our kids to. I don't want them all to be beaten into them. I don't want them to face the same thing I faced when I was younger. But I do want them to be proud. And I do want them not to take their kippahs off. And I do want them to walk around proudly, not afraid to show their Judaism. I do want our community to stop hiding in buildings and start having public events. I do want our synagogues and our Jewish institutions to stop being fortresses and allow people to come in and experience the beauty of Judaism. But perhaps that's not going to happen in a land that's not ours. Perhaps that's not going to happen in a land where we're just visitors. Maybe we have to wait until all Jews go back to our homeland. back to the indigenous land of the Jewish people. Maybe we have to encourage people to do that now. The other day somebody said to me, I'm very afraid of the rise in anti-Jewism that's happening across North America. We see it happening everywhere. Jew hatred is rising. It's showing its ugly head again. And it's true, it is. And it's true, it is showing its ugly head again. That's very, very true. But it's not new. The rise in Jew hatred hasn't been that profound, believe it or not. I've made my life covering this. I've done thousands of shows, and every show we've covered it, and every single summer for the last seven summers, at least seven I could count. Every single show for the last seven summers, I've spent my time talking about Jews being attacked in the broad daylight in New York and New Jersey, across the United States. Jews being thrown down the subway stairs in Montreal. I've talked about this on the show for years. And it seems like every summer it escalates. I guess people stop hibernating in the summer and start coming out, and the hatred comes out in the warm weather. But for years I've been talking about this. During COVID, I don't know if any of you remember, but during COVID, the mayor of New York had a press conference, and he said at the press conference that that there are certain communities that are spreading COVID because they're not complying with the laws. And right behind him, there was a screen, and on the screen was a picture of Lubavitch Jews praying. Orthodox Lubavitch Jews praying. That's where the Jew hatred comes from. Jew hatred comes from the top. No baby is born hating people. Hatred is a learned thing. It's taught from generation to generation. And so we have a situation, and this is the situation, where Jews have been scapegoated over and over and over again. Jews have been attacked in the street. Nobody's done anything to protect them. Organizations that were set up, like the Jewish Defense League, have been deemed by the Jewish community more than anyone else as radical organizations, crazies who want to be vigilantes. And so they've all basically disappeared across North America. The crazy vigilantes who were protecting the Jewish community. The crazy vigilantes who weren't afraid to stand up and fight the Jew haters, weren't afraid to stand up and fight the Nazis as they stood in the street to fight the Jews, as they stood in the street to kill the Jews. Weren't afraid to get out there into Crown Heights during the Crown Heights riot and protect Jewish life and Jewish property. Weren't afraid to go into the subways and to walk old ladies home. But the mainstream Jewish community, they were afraid. What were they afraid of? The federations of the world? They were afraid of losing their power. Because, and I hate to say it, but it is so true. And I know the federations hate when I say this, but it is absolutely the truth. Much of the funding, many of the donations that come in after an anti-Jewish attack. When the federations of the world and the B'nai B'ris of the world and the Anti-Defamation Leagues of the world come up with some strong statement after an attack on the Jews. Every strong statement is worth X amount of dollars. And so because it is so lucrative for Jew hatred to exist, it would be terrible for these organizations if Jew hatred disappeared. So instead of trying to find a solution, instead of trying to encourage Jews to defend themselves, these organizations for years, and it's still true to a certain extent today, although today young Jews aren't listening anymore, and are starting to defend themselves, starting to defend Judaism, especially since October 7th. But what it has led to a full generation or multiple generations of weak Jews, of Jews who have sat around and accepted everything that's been dished onto them. Jews that have been condemned, strong Jews who have gotten up to fight who have been condemned over and over again, who have been blacklisted and blackballed from the Jewish communities because they're radicals. Banned from Federation buildings. Not invited to sit on any committees. Not invited to be part of anything in the Jewish community because they're radicals. All they wanted to do was help Jews, protect Jews. All they want to do was stand for their community. And it's funny. And it's really funny because the same people who condemned them, the same people who were horrified that Jews could be violent, are now calling and asking, why don't we have these organizations? What happened to them? Why do these organizations exist? We need them back. I see this posted on media, on social media all the time. We need them back. Well, why isn't the JDL here? They shot at a school. Why isn't the JDL here? Oh, they're encampments on McGill campus. Why isn't the JDL here? Where is the JDL? I hear this all the time. I read this all the time on Facebook. The JDL does not exist because the Jewish community decided the JDL should not exist. The people who wanted to start the JDL in various cities, including Montreal and Toronto, were drummed out of the business by the Jewish community. People tried to set up security forces and tried to set up volunteer organizations that would help defend the Jewish community. We're sent, the leaders of these organizations were reported to the police and to the RCMP and were put under investigation and were threatened until they backed off and stopped. That's why we don't have a JDL. That's why we don't have any of these organizations that were set up to defend the Jewish community, because the mainstream Jewish community stopped it from happening. And don't look at me like I don't know what I'm talking about. I could tell you from firsthand experience, I know what I'm talking about. Jewish organizations like Federation of B'nai B'rith should be ashamed of themselves. Because young Jews who are ready to devote themselves to the Jewish community, ready to devote themselves to protection of old people, devote themselves to the physical protection, were threatened, were harangued, were condemned until they backed off and disappeared into the society. It's sad, but that's what happened. So that's why these organizations don't exist anymore. That's why there's nobody out there, no young Jews out there protecting the Jewish community, fighting for the Jewish community, physically fighting for the Jewish community when Jews are being attacked. Because they were scared away by the organized Jewish community. And why would the organized Jewish community do this? Why do you think they would? They did it and continue to do it because they want to have full power. They want to have full power. That is the reason that they do this. They don't want some young kid, some 20-odd-year-old kid, showing them up. They don't want a group of young kids, you know, speaking on behalf of the Jewish community. They have the money. They have the infrastructure. They have the power, they think. So when a young kid gets up to do something, or a young kid gets up to say something, or a young kid gets into a fight, the first thing you'll hear out of any Federation or B'nai B'rith in the mouth is, oh, we condemn that violence. You'll never hear them say, kudos to the young guy who beat up the guy trying to attack the woman. Kudos to the man in front of Federation, to the kid in front of Federation, who jumped on the pro-Hamas protester that was trying to hit an elderly person with a flag, with one of his pro-Hamas flags. You'll never hear them say that. The reason for that is because once they empower young people to protect the community, they feel that they have diminished some of their power in the community. And power equals money. And don't think for a second that at the end of the day, when she wade through all the loads of dung that are piled up, that the bottom line isn't the only thing that's being thought about. Because that's all that matters. Sad commentary, it really is. Because at one time, I believe at one time, Jewish community leaders cared more about the community than they cared about the money. I was so disillusioned when I found out that that wasn't the case. I could go on all night about this. I really can. I'm really well-versed in this topic. I've spoken about it for many, many years. But every time I bring it up, every time I talk about it, every time we discuss it on the show, I get really upset. I get really sad. Because I expect better and I expect more from the community. I expect more. I expect the community to encourage schools to teach self-defense. To encourage schools to not teach what some schools are teaching as Israel advocacy. That a Palestinian state and a Jewish state could exist on the same land, and there's no conflict in supporting a Palestinian state and supporting a Jewish state at the same time. I wish that the federations would not be supporting this kind of thing, but they are. And as long as these things are being supported, as long as these philosophies and these ideas are being taught in our schools, we will continue to be a weak nation. And as long as kids aren't taught self-defense, as long as kids aren't taught how to fight for Israel, like really fight for Israel on campus, we will always lose the propaganda war. The war is over. We've lost. And we haven't lost because we don't have a just cause, because our cause is true and just. We've lost because we have corrupt leadership. Corrupt leadership that will not allow proper teaching of history, that will not allow proper teaching of Jewish pride. It's sad. I bet you if you ask a kid on campus, a Jewish kid on campus, to define Zionism. And I used to do this at the high school level. I used to teach a class in Israel advocacy. And I'd go into class, my first assignment would be, and the kids always took it as a joke, but it really wasn't. My first assignment was always, all right, you have three words. This is your first homework assignment. You have three words. Define Zionism in three words. And I always told them, I don't need three, I could do it in two. But I'm giving you three, so define Zionism, that's your homework. Define Zionism in three words. And the kids always took it as a joke, and they always waited until 5 seconds before class to do the assignment, and they always failed that assignment. But Zionism defined in two words is Jewish nationalism. If you believe that Jews are a nation and deserve a homeland, then you are a supporter of Zionism. If you move to Israel and fight for that homeland and live in that homeland, then you are a Zionist. That's the definition. Another one that used to get them also was, what is the difference between a terrorist and a freedom fighter? Think about that for a second. What is the difference between a terrorist and a freedom fighter? Most people say it's the same thing. Well, it's not. Not even close to being the same thing. A freedom fighter is somebody fighting for the freedom from oppression. The way to fight for freedom from oppression is to attack military and political targets. So anybody attacking a military base or anybody attacking a politician would be a freedom fighter. A terrorist attacks civilians. That's it. That's the difference. All right. I'm done. Have a great evening. Thank you so much for joining me. I will see you again on the next episode of the show. I really appreciate you being here. I'll see you again soon. I'm Howie Silberger. Have a great night.